Good morning, everyone, and welcome to my show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and I hope you're having a great day. You know, we're in the middle of spring here, and you'd never know it since we've had 80-degree temperatures here around for weeks. And, you know, the swimming pool is open here. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that, those people that are in the north that are still shoveling their snow. So I'm really sorry, but know that summer's coming. Hopefully you'll be able to be, you know, outside enjoying nature soon. Today, we'll be talking about having children and the trouble people are having conceiving. Infertility rates, they seem to be increasing, but you know what? All that really matters is you, not the numbers, not everybody else, not what studies are done or what everything else is going on. All that matters is about you and you having a child. That is what's important. You know, vacation and summertime, it brings the kids out everywhere. You see them in grocery stores, on parks, you see them walking, you see them at the mall. And that's because they're not indoors or in school. So if you're really longing for a child, this may be the hardest time of the year. Just being around kids really can make your heart ache. My guest today is Iris Walker. Oh, goodness, I hope I didn't massacre her name. But she's the author of Riding the Infertility Roller Coaster. And she's here to share her own experiences of having a child, what legal, health, and relationship issues you may not have thought of, and how to reach the end goal, a child. Iris is an advocate for people fighting infertility for 12 years now, and she's a licensed clinical social worker for 34 years. So she has a lot of experience in this area about what really happens when you hear those words that you're not able to have a child or you think you might potentially be having a problem. So I'd like to welcome Iris to the show. Good morning, Iris.
Good morning, Dr. Jeanette. It's great to be here.
I'm so happy you're able to be with us at the beginning of the summer, you know, when so many people are thinking about kids and seeing a lot of kids and maybe suffering in silence. So maybe we will be able to give them some tips today. We'll be able to help them ease that.
I think what you said is so right. If we have Mother's Day coming up around the corner, and that's a really, really tough time for women who are trying to become pregnant and become a mother. And there are reminders everywhere that that's not happening, and it's really, really difficult for people.
Well, Iris, could you share with our listeners a little bit more information about how you even got started on this and
sure.
Why you even have taken it up, you know, taking on talking about this?
Yeah. I got married later in life. I was 42 when I got married. And then a month after we got married, I got pregnant, and then I had a miscarriage. At that time, I really realized how much I wanted to be a mother. I went to my doctor, and for me, in talking with my doctor, and I do advise everyone to consult with a doctor, I learned that the best option for me was to get an egg donor. So we began working with our clinic. It took us 9 months to find someone. We found what we felt was the perfect person. We were getting ready to start. It involved me giving myself injections every day. And the person that was our donor, that literally almost the day we were supposed to start, she got pregnant, so we had to start all over again. We found another egg donor, and we do what's called a transfer. That's when her egg is combined in a petri dish with my husband's sperm. That's known as in vitro fertilization. And then that embryo is transferred to me. We did that, and unfortunately, I had a miscarriage there. We had one other opportunity to do a transfer. It was going to be our what I had decided would be our last opportunity because we had three embryos left, and physically and emotionally, it's very difficult to go through that, and I had decided that if that didn't work, we were going to choose not to become parents that way. And amazingly, we were successful. I had a successful pregnancy, and I had a daughter. I promised myself at that point that if I was able to have a child, that I would do whatever I could to give back and help people who were going through infertility, because my experience with it was so incredibly painful. and I thought I could use my personal experience and my professional expertise as a social worker to do that. So I began leading groups and doing individual counseling with people, and I volunteered for Resolve, which is a national infertility association, and I did work with them, and it was very rewarding. I was doing workshops, but I wanted to do more, and I had decided that I would write a book, and I went and did the research and looked and tried to find things that were not out there that I thought were important, like how infertility affects men because they're affected differently. I interviewed couples that made different choices on their infertility paths. Some chose adoption, some chose to remain childless, and some chose different types of infertility treatment. I included their information and their experience, and then I also looked at issues that I didn't find in books, like how to pick a clinic, how to find a doctor, how to build a support network. And I also looked at what happens to you after you have a child, after infertility, because infertility affects you as a couple and affects you as parents, and so I took a look at that. And,
a lot of people, even when they hear the word infertility, so if you could define for us and go back to the beginning, like what really infertility actually means, because a lot of people loosely use that topic or that word, and they say they're having issues. So is infertility the end game of the result of the diagnosis, or is infertility, you know, having issues all along? You know, so what really, really is that? Who is saying it? Are you saying can't have kids, or is your doctor saying you can't, or is he saying your infertility issues beforehand when actually you end up do having children? So, you know, like really, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. In its most basic version, I would say that the definition of infertility is when a person wants a child and is unable to have a child. Now, there are a host of reasons why that can be. One interesting thing is that oftentimes people assume that it's the woman, that something's going on medically with the woman is the reason. But in reality, infertility happens about 40% of the time with women and about 40% of the time with men. Sometimes both people may have some issues. And 20% of the time, doctors cannot tell you what the cause of the infertility is. And that's particularly difficult for people to cope with because we all want answers and reasons so we can try to approach the problem and fix it, and sometimes that's not the case. The way that doctors look at it is they generally tell you that if you've been trying to have a child for a year on your own without any kinds of interventions, and if you're between the ages of 18 and 34 is what they generally say, if you've been trying to have a child for a year and you're unsuccessful, they use the term infertile. For women that are 35 or older, they generally recommend that if you're trying to have a child for 6 months and you're unable to have a child, that that's a point that you should see a doctor just to have examination. There's all kinds of testing that they do, including blood work. They look at in women, they look at your ovaries and your uterus. They look at your hormone levels. They look at they do a complete history to try to determine what the cause. In men, they also do, they look at blood work. They also look at sperm. There's lots of reasons that things that can affect sperm, motility, the size of the sperm, the ability for the sperm to move. All kinds of testing that they can do. It's very sophisticated now. They've come a very long way from when I first started out in a relatively short amount of time. So after that, all that is done, sometimes a doctor can give you a diagnosis, sometimes they can't, but there are a lot of interventions and things that they can do. Even if a person does have a medical problem or a reason that they can't have a baby successfully through a pregnancy and have a healthy baby, there are opportunities that people can choose to take to still become parents. We don't necessarily have to carry the baby ourselves anymore. There's surrogacy where someone else can actually carry the child for you and you can become the parent. So there are a lot of options now that weren't available several years ago.
You know, I think there's so many different ways people can go to have children. That's why I had said, you know, about infertility, what does it really mean? Because the end game, you know, many people do end up having children, not all, but like we had said in the beginning too, all it really matters is about you. So it really just doesn't matter what the words are, what they're saying, or the clinical trials or any of these other studies. If you can't have a child, then that's, you're the one that has, you know, to deal with all of this and to be able to go through this whole passage. So it's really all about your process and your pathway, you know, and how you can have a child.
I totally agree. I think people have to sort of search their souls and their hearts. And if you have a partner, it's going to take a lot of serious, thoughtful discussion. I think people need to ask themselves what parent means to them. For some people, that means they must have that biological link to a child. And for some people, that doesn't. When my husband and I were looking at what we were going to do, I knew that if we used my eggs, that chances were that I would not have a successful pregnancy. And my husband and I sat down, and he said, "How will you feel about a baby that doesn't have that biological link to you?" And my response was, I would be carrying that child. My blood would be flowing through that child, that she would be growing inside of me, and I would feel that she was my child, and I did. Some people, in the case of a surrogate, a woman can, if she can't carry a child, she can still use her egg, and a surrogate can carry that child, and it can still be that biological link. But what people have to do is think about what's important to them and what parenting means to them. Adoption is a wonderful, wonderful process for people, and it gives an opportunity to parent in incredibly meaningful and important ways. And there are lots of children here and lots of children in other countries that would love to have a loving parent in their lives. So that certainly is another option, another way for people to go.
You know, we talk about this so much. When people say something like, we have an issue with infertility here, and I think that really tends to either bring together a couple, or it could draw a couple apart. It can also cause a lot of issues within families. Let's say if you have a brother or a sister who's got 5 and 6 kids, and all of a sudden you're not able to have any. I mean, this can really cause a lot of dissension. I'm sure with you being in social work, you've heard about all of the different patterns and all of the different issues other families have had, and how do you really even go about working through that? I mean, wow, you know what? You could almost come in, you're almost at wit's ends, you know, with all the different things going on in your life and possibly your partner's life.
I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Jeanette. It's a huge, huge issue for people because people, relatives, friends, family, they do not understand what a life crisis infertility is, and it can sever relationships because of the insensitivity of the people that you would want to support you. Because people don't understand how devastating it is, and someone's having a baby shower, and it's just too painful emotionally to be there celebrating your sister's birth when you are unable to conceive a child. And so what I recommend for people in terms of coping with that is to educate friends and family about what you're going through. I even talk to the people about creating a roadmap where you give your family and friends information about ways they can be supportive of you. I think one of the most important things I tell people, couples talk about, is how much information do you want to share with people around you about what you're going through? My husband and I sat down and talked about that. When I first got pregnant, he wanted to tell everybody, and then we lost the baby. And after that, I said to him, I want to not tell people because I didn't want to go through the process of telling people I lost a child. So a couple, if you are part of a couple, you need to sit down and think about what you want to say. You can simply say, we hope someday to be parents. And that's all we want to say right now. We will let you know when we're ready to say more. We would appreciate it if you would respect our wishes about that. If, for example, you know someone's having a baby shower or you're going to be at a family gathering where there's a lot of kids, depending on the relationship you have with the person giving the gathering, what you can say to them is, I just want you to know that being around young children or being around someone that's pregnant is particularly painful for me right now because I'm going through this process of trying to be a parent myself. I love you and support you. I'm not sure that I'll be able to attend. Maybe you and I privately can get together so I can help you celebrate this. Or you can have a plan in place where if you go to an event that you're not sure you're going to feel comfortable at, you can let the person know that if it gets really tough for you, you may need to leave. And so you have a plan in place. They understand that it's not them, and then it won't feel awkward for you if you need to leave. So having these things in place, opening up a discussion, and telling people what they need to do to support you really closes down a lot of problematical areas if you let people know what you need. And frankly, your family and friends appreciate it too because oftentimes they don't know what to say. They don't understand. They want to help, and sometimes when people want to help, they say and do the wrong things.
Well, you know, again, too, when you say, you know, you want to keep it to yourself and you want to be able to handle it within your own close relationship. You don't want people either to go to that actual extreme where they're hiding things and suffering in silence. So I think that's where a lot of getting professional help may also be important because, you know, you can't be sitting at home and crying all the time at home in peace and then go out and expect to be able to function, you know, at work or with your family and just kind of holding that back. I mean, that will eat you up inside. And even those type feelings could actually side rail a lot of your treatments that you may be going through or some
Absolutely.
Of the work that you need to get through to be able to have a child at the end.
Absolutely. That silence and that internalizing it can create more stress, and stress does become an issue in terms of infertility. I really agree with you 100% because the infertility spills over into our work lives, our personal lives. If you're going to school, it's hard to concentrate, it's hard to focus, you can't sleep. I can remember when I was having my treatment and I was working, I would have to sneak out and go across the street to make phone calls to find out about my test to see what my test results were. And it was really, really stressful. So I totally agree about sometimes seeking professional help can make a huge difference. There are counselors and therapists now that specialize in, they call it family building or reproductive therapy, and they have expertise in working with people that are going through infertility. So I certainly would recommend seeing somebody like that. There are all kinds of support groups. For some people, they just need to know that they're not alone because when you're going through infertility, lots of times you feel isolated and alone. And for some people, just having a chance to talk to other people that are going through it really makes a world of difference. Resolve is the National Infertility Association, and they have a website. It's R-E-S-O-L-V-E. And regardless of where you live in the country, if you go to their site, they will tell you in your individual state where there are therapists, where there are support groups, and they can give you information about doctors and programs that specifically deal with infertility.
You know, and definitely your book is a good place to start also. If you could share with us a little bit your book, where they could purchase that book, and what you have included in the book. Because I think when people are really looking to start, they don't know where to start. So to hear someone else's experience from beginning to end and say, oh my goodness, I never even thought that would be an issue, you know, and look at this or look at that. Maybe we do need to think about these things before we even start.
Yeah, it's very important. My book, you can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it through me on my website, which is infertilityrollercoaster.com. You can also order it through a local bookstore as well. My book is really all-inclusive, and it does begin at the beginning by describing infertility. And then what I do is it's really important to find a doctor or a person that you trust and that you have a good relationship with that can help you through the process. So I take a look at how to find a doctor. I also look at all the infertility treatment options and some of the issues we talked about. How do you balance work and infertility treatment? The other really important issue is insurance and insurance coverage, because as many people know, infertility can cost a lot of money. There are some states now, there are a dozen states that do have, as a part of the state law, thanks to the great work of individual people in that state, there's legislation that does pay for some infertility treatment. For example, in Illinois, we do have that, which is where I'm from. I do look at the other really important aspect of it is the legal piece that people don't even think about. But you do need a good lawyer, particularly if you're doing surrogacy or if you're doing adoption or if you have an egg donor or a sperm donor or an embryo donor. You want to make sure that everything is legally in place. That's really important. So you want to have – there are – attorneys now that specialize in adoption, in reproductive or family building law, and I would certainly recommend that people do consult them. And then I do go through looking at the psychology of it and how to build a support network. And what's interesting too is even after long struggles with infertility, when you finally become a parent, people assume that, or you become pregnant, people assume that anxiety or those fears will go away, and the interesting thing is that they don't. One of the things that I did was I led a group of for couples that were infertile and got pregnant, because what happens is they're incredibly anxious all through the pregnancy because they're concerned that the pregnancy, something will happen, and then they don't take time to celebrate and enjoy the pregnancy. So I look at that piece of it and how infertility does affect us as parents if we are lucky enough to become parents. And it's also really important to look at, and my book looks at how you become a couple again, because you focus so much energy and time in your relationship on becoming a parent that sometimes what happens is that couple relationship gets lost in the quest to become a parent, and it's important to be able to do both.
Well, you know, and so many times, just to touch on a few things that you had spoken about is the money. You know, now that a lot of insurance companies have changed their policies, I'd like to let the listeners know that it's very important what you thought you had coverage for when you got the policy, or what you thought you had coverage for last year when you renewed, or whatever the circumstance is. You know, before you even set your foot down this path, you really need to check your insurance coverage, because a lot of policies have now dropped many of their little pieces, and sometimes they let you know, and it could be a flyer in there with your bill and you'd never notice, or it could be just an email that they sent you. There's a very great amount right now of changes going on. People's deductibles, where they may have had a deductible of $5,000, all of a sudden it's ramped up to $10,000, and then there's also caps on what they'll actually pay per visit or per instance, meaning let's say if you have cancer, they'll pay this much for cancer. If you have diabetes, they'll pay this much for diabetes. But then some policies, there's also a cap on the policy, what they're going to pay outright. And where a lot of us may think of insurance as, you know, the golden ticket, you just go in and, yeah, I know I have to pay $1,000 a year and it covers everything and I'm good to go. That is simply not the case anymore. And to know this up front can really save maybe your relationship with your husband, or it could save your house, or you may just be really ending up in a place where you're in the middle of a treatment or in the middle of a process, and all of a sudden they say, you can't come back. You know, what does that agent do to people? So knowing
that's
about the money up front is seriously important, and lay out that plan.
That's incredibly important, and it really is. I do know people that mortgage their homes to have a child and then were unsuccessful, and they'd spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. A couple things in terms of infertility that's good for people to know. I totally agree with you. You need to read the fine print of your insurance. I ended up switching my insurance to a plan that paid for 100%. But what I would recommend to people if they are experiencing infertility or if they are thinking about having a child, if you do have a job and there's an HR person, spend some time with them to find out exactly what their coverage is. Also, if you contact Resolve, you can find out about your state laws to see what, if anything, is covered in the way of infertility treatment. Another thing to think about is clinics now are so aware and programs are so aware of the cost and that that's prohibitive for people that some programs will offer scholarships for people or a loan.
Right.
Some programs will say, we'll help you get pregnant, if you don't, we'll refund the money. And some clinics are very good about giving very affordable loans. So if you are working with a clinic, be sure and talk with the insurance or finance person there. They may be the most important person you talk to in the process and find out what's available.
Also, going back for when you said about changing plans, just to let everybody know, pre-existing exists. So if
Absolutely.
You do have something that's a pre-existing, do not, under any circumstances, say, I'm going to change plans and not pay your month and then go find something else because you may be without. Because if
that's
you stop paying one, they're not going to take you back. They're not in good faith. They're not like your mother, oh, I'm going to take you back because you had a little temper tantrum. Not going to happen. Insurance companies are in the business of making money, not paying out money. So it's very important to remember that.
And you have to be honest. If you're not,
right.
and then the insurance company does find out, they immediately will pull the plug and you'll be responsible for all costs.
Right, and you'll
so,
be without nothing then because then no one's going to take you back.
That's right, and that stays
right.
on your permanent record. So you want to make sure. That's a really important point, absolutely.
The other thing, too, we were talking about is about eggs and sperm, too, about having them available for those who may need those banks. I can tell
yeah.
you from living here in Louisiana, there was an instance here where things were not kept. It was a very reputable place. Things were not kept correctly. People got the wrong donations back to them, and they were not viable when the people needed them, so all of their cases had failed and different reasons and different things. So while it's good to check where you're going or who you're dealing with, they may be reputable, but just know that everything in the world is not 100%. That's why it's called life. But you just have to really be sure you check everything and then even put stop guards in place, you know, legally. What if this doesn't happen? What if this plan doesn't work? You know, really what goes on afterwards there?
Yeah, there's been a lot of, you know, you can find a lot of cases
mm-hmm.
like that. That's why I mentioned earlier that the legal piece is so important. But I do want to let your listeners know there are two resources that are really, I think, great. One is a resource. It's the CDC START, the Center for Disease Control has a website, and the website is ART, Assisted Reproductive Therapy and Treatment. And you can go there, and you can look up your state and every clinic in your state. And they keep and collect statistics, and they publish them every 2 or 3 years. And what it does is it tells you the success rates at those places, and it can tell you places that are better, and also places that have performed more of the type of procedure that might be the one that you're going to need.
Right.
So that's a really, really great site, and I would strongly recommend it. But when you are looking at that site, there's two things to keep in mind. One is you want to look at the statistics about people your age. And secondly, you want to look at the statistics about people that use your particular procedure. For example, if you use an egg donor. And the last piece is you want to look at live births because that gives you a clear picture. So that's a really great site. Also, there's another site called SART, or it's put out by the Society for Assisted Reproductive. They're the doctors that do the treatment, and they also collect data about success rates and procedures on a national basis, and it's SART if you go online, and that will give you information about reputable good places with higher success rates. So I would encourage people to check those out. When you're going to a clinic or you're going to a doctor or wherever you're going, or an adoption agency, whatever, what you want to do is try to make sure that they're as reputable as possible. And I did it like an interview. We ended up using the doctor that was at the hospital I was working at, but I had my husband come in and basically interview the doctor, make sure that philosophically we were on the same page, find out how many patients he's worked with that were my age, how many patients that he did the kind of treatment that I needed, to make sure that you're working with someone that you feel comfortable with and confident will help you move towards the path of parenthood.
It does make a difference, and there are great success stories in all programs. So it's something to definitely be able to keep in your head that, you know, if you feel good about it, you do all the things along the path, hopefully you'll have a great success. But then let's talk about divorce. Now, being that you're the social worker, this would be something good to talk about, because let's say you went through this whole process and then you have a child, and the child may be whose donation of DNA, and how does that work, you know, in a matter of fact of a divorce afterwards? Because granted, a lot of people go through this process and they have a child, and then, like you have said in the beginning, your relationship really suffers, and sometimes one or the other of the spouse may put too much focus on the child and may neglect the other spouse. I mean, I'm sure that that does happen in many instances, and, you know, that could put a lot of stress.
Yeah, it can happen. It can bring you closer together, but it also can bring you apart. That's why it's hugely important that there's good communication between the couple. And sometimes it does mean seeing a counselor or a therapist. Men and women cope with infertility in different ways. Men tend to internalize it more and not talk about it, not talk about the emotional piece. They tend to feel that they need to be more protective. And women, generally speaking, need to talk about it, are more emotional about it. There's also, when you're getting treatment, the hormonal piece of it is huge, and women are more emotional just because of the treatment that they're getting, and not to mention the life crisis and the stress that it puts on you. In terms of the divorce piece, it's you know, even if the child is a result of a donor, legally it's still your child. But the exception to that, unfortunately, is in the lesbian and gay communities. Laws vary from state to state about parenting. Sometimes, even when there's if it's a lesbian couple and one woman donates the egg, and they get a sperm donor, sometimes you may have to your partner might have to legally adopt the baby to be a legal parent. In some places, the laws are very different, so I would encourage people to check out the individual laws in their individual states, but it definitely gets more complicated depending on the laws if you are a lesbian or gay couple.
So let's say if you are, excuse me, if you're a husband and it is your sperm, and the woman is having a donation of an egg, and you have someone else carry that child, who legally would have respect to that child?
Yeah, that's surrogacy, and that's the most, by far, the most complicated legal situation. And that, I would say, it's a must that you have legal representation there. What can happen is, and you have to have things in place, because there have been situations where the surrogate decided to do something different than the couple wanted. And you have to decide, for example, if the surrogate works, who's going to, and can't work, who's going to pay for that? If the surrogate needs medical attention, who's going to pay for that? What role the surrogate would play after the child is born? So it's hugely complicated, and it needs to be spelled out in a legal document. And I would encourage the surrogate to have proper legal documentation, too, because you want everything in place in case there is a problem. I have known about cases where problems did arise.
Sorry, I had to step away for a second. I had a cough.
You okay?
Yep, yeah.
Okay.
I think. So, Iris, if you could give us a little more information about diet and stress, how that really works, because I know that's so very important.
Yeah. I think stress is an inescapable partner with infertility, and it does play the relationship between stress and infertility. Stress can cause infertility, or infertility can cause stress. And so we all cope with stress differently, and it's really important to take a look at ways to reduce it, and even simple things like breathing, just taking time to breathe and relax your mind, do some visualization is one thing you can do. For some people, journaling is really helpful. Just writing can be a way to alleviate stress, and you don't want to just write when you're depressed or you're angry or you're frustrated. You want to write when you're feeling good, too. I think it's important to take time out as you're going through your infertility journey to nurture your relationship with your partner, to do things that you enjoy. Think about things you enjoy doing before you enter the world of infertility, and if it's possible, do them again. Even taking time to take a walk or going to a movie or having a nice dinner can make a huge, huge difference. The other thing I recommend for people in terms of stress is identify people in your life who are supportive and you can go to laugh, to cry, to just be there and relax. It's really great to make those times because a lot of people don't do that. Massage is a really great way to deal with infertility. The goal of massage is to loosen or untangle tightened tissues, and it helps release and free up your reproductive organs. People can use acupressure, reflexology, or massage to help stimulate the body's hormones and relax the body. And those kinds of things also increase your blood flow, and your blood flows to your reproductive organs, and that helps. There's different forms of massage that specifically help in terms of infertility. There's a Chinese form of massage that helps get your body in balance and helps allow for or enhance fertilization and conception. And there's a form of massage that's been used, this Chinese massage that was used to treat endometriosis, which is a very common condition that causes infertility. It's when the tissue grows abnormally and can be found near the ovaries or the fallopian tubes. And it's very painful, and it causes a lot of scarring and bleeding. So there's all kinds of natural kinds of things that people can do. Another thing people can do is diet. Eating healthy is really key. There is some research that shows that obesity can impact your fertility. So in terms of diet, it's important for people to eat more monounsaturated fats like olive oil and less trans fats like fast foods. Try to eat a lot of vegetable protein like soy, and reduce animal protein like red meat, and reducing consumption of high-fat dairy things like ice cream and cheese is another thing people can do on their own that can enhance fertility. People have a lot of questions about exercise and infertility, and what I would recommend is that they talk to their doctors to see what amount of exercise is right for you and also what type of exercise is right for you. Sometimes, like people who jog or run, sometimes doctors might say that they may not want you to do that. So it's important to figure out what routine is just right for you. So I would encourage them to talk to their doctors. But if there is something that you can do in terms of exercise, it's great to do that to keep the blood flowing and the oxygen. I think it's just good for you emotionally, too, if you can do that.
So many times, you know, we talk about diet and everybody says, oh, it's not a big deal, I eat healthy. And then you ask them to write it down for about a week. And what you find is people will do that for about the first day or two, and then after that they don't bother because they really don't know what they eat or focus on what they eat. And if you're going to be nourishing a child, it's so important to do that work beforehand and not to say, oh, well, I'll wait until I get pregnant and then I will start to eat better. You know, it's like running against that wall, you hit it, and then you're going to make amends for it later.
Absolutely. I think one of the things about journaling what you eat is how shocked people are about what they actually put in their mouth, because I don't think we realize it. We eat
right.
And don't think about it, or we're in front of the TV, or we're grabbing something while we're working, and we don't really think about it. But it is important to, if you are thinking about becoming a parent, to prepare your body to make that happen.
Right.
Do everything that you can. And some people feel strongly that they prefer natural interventions instead of medical interventions, and these are things that people can do. The other thing about infertility is one of the primary things that happens is you feel a total loss of control of your body and your life, and these are things you can do to regain that control, and I think that's really important to have those mechanisms in place.
I think sometimes, too, we talk about having control, but we also maybe should use the word focus. So it's time to put focus back on yourself. You know, a lot of times when you're running that train, you're going to work, you're going out, you're going on vacation, and you're not really paying much attention to something that may be happening. Let's say you may be having pain, or you may be having missed cycles, or different things that would happen, and you would say, I'm not going to worry about it. You know, I'm too busy. I didn't pay attention. You know, and when you sit down to fill out medical history, sometimes you say, you know, the question, have you had any missed cycles? And you're like, well, I don't know. Yeah, probably, maybe. I don't know when. I don't know how many. So they really are not focused on even about themselves to be able to notice when this process may be starting to become an issue, you know, and not even to know that there were signs along the way that maybe they should have paid attention to.
I think that's true. One thing that infertility does do is you have a very heightened awareness of your body. When you were talking, it made me think about when I first started out in my path to becoming a parent. And the first time I talked to the nurse at the clinic, and we were talking about my getting a test, and
okay.
I was saying, talking about going on a vacation, and she sort of laughed. I mean, she laughed at me, and she said, okay, the first thing you need to know is that you can't plan anything, that you have to be present, and that, and what she was saying to me is I needed to go to that clinic every day for blood work. I needed to basically put everything on hold and be prepared to be in it 100%. And she said, you can't plan a vacation, you can't, because you're going to need to be available to us based on a test. If you do get treatment, the medical piece of the treatment, it does involve having blood work regularly, because they need to check your hormone levels. They need to do a lot of testing to see what's going on with your body to try to point you in the right direction to determine what the most effective treatment's going to be. So you do need to be aware of that. I became very good friends with the person that drew blood in my for me in my clinic.
Right.
And I got very friendly with the nurses because I was there on a regular daily basis.
Well, we say that you need to be aware and be really up close and personal with your body beforehand. But isn't that what you should be doing anyway when you do have children? You don't plan for vacations. You just pretty much have to be present every day because you don't know what's coming with you. So kind of it's a good thing. It's preempting, you know. You're getting ahead of time a little bit of the taste of
I think
paying attention.
Spontaneity and flexibility are two good traits to have in general with life, because it throws you curveballs when you don't expect it.
Right. Well, Iris, it was absolutely great having you as a guest today. If you would like to share with the listeners ways to be able to contact you, where you have some information and some of your resources, and also about where to purchase the book and all your websites, that would be great.
It's my pleasure, Dr. Jeanette. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. My website is, well, I'll spell my name too. My first name is
great.
Iris, My last name is W-A-I-C-H-L-E-R. I can be reached at my website, which is infertilityrollercoaster.com. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that people have or any information that I can give. I'm very happy to share it with people. My book can be bought on Amazon. My book can also be bought through my website. And if you go to your local bookstore, they can order it for you as well.
That's really great. You know, I think that a lot of people hear bits and pieces when they go to the doctor, and the doctor will give you some pamphlets, you know, and for every stop that the doctor has you work on, let's say he says go to the social worker and you get some information there and you get some information at the doctor's office, and he'll say go see a nutritionist and you get some information there. I think your book is a good general overall saying how all of those pieces fit together.
Yeah, I think of it as a toolbox, and depending on where you're at, my book can give you some pointers and some guidance and answer some of the questions that you have. The one other piece to my book that I just wanted to mention, Dr. Jeanette, is some people take this long, long journey to become a parent, and it's hard to know when or if you want to stop, and that is a really important piece of it. Some people do come to a point, but knowing when and how to do that is really tough. And my book does address that piece, and that's a really important question to raise and to think about and to get some support about whatever decision that you make.
And in your book, you do have a lot of resources in the back.
Yeah, I do. I do. I have resources, and I have a glossary that defines some of the terms, because when you enter the world of infertility, it's an alphabet world, and it's very confusing what it all means, and you need something to sort that all out.
Especially when somebody says something to you and you're like, okay, I got it, but you really don't have it. So, knowing a definition or being able to say, okay, that's right, or maybe it's not what I thought it was.
Yeah, and picking a doctor that you're so comfortable with that you can say, can you explain that to me in a different way, or what does that mean? You want to work with someone that you feel comfortable doing that with. Or at the very least, have someone else with you at your appointments to help kind of gather the information, because you're so stressed out, you don't always hear everything that they say to you.
Right. Well, Iris, again, thank you so much for being with us today. If anybody has any further questions, you may contact Iris directly. Her website is www.infertilityrollercoaster.com. That is also the name of her book. You can also purchase it on her website or at Amazon.com. And again, thank you so much, Iris, for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
So if anybody would like further information about Iris, the links, if you may have missed them, they're written out in the show description on this page. You'll be able to find those links there. And if you have any further questions, you can also email me directly through Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today. And until tomorrow, where we'll be talking about another topic that is very interesting in today's life challenges. Thank you so much for being with us today. And have a great day.